Okay, it's really a pleasure for me to speak tonight at the pre-Tikkun Leil, but Tikkun Leil, this is the first second, sorry, this is the second time in 40 years that I will not be giving a Tikkun Leil on Leil Shavuot. I'm very happy that we were able to arrange that we are able to learn Torah together for Chag HaShavuot the night before. Already on Midrashet Yom Rishon, a little while back, I spoke about Megillat Rut and really studied Megillat Rut in detail. What I'd like to do today is to build on that idea and extend it. What's so special about Shavuot is that Shavuot is Kabbalat HaTorah, and yet we read Megillat Rut about Chesed. We read about Malchut. We read about Naomi and Rut, who are very strong individuals who really help Boaz complete his destiny. I want to start a little earlier. I want to start a little with Tamar. My theory for tonight is Tamar saves Yehuda. Two women. But the ultimate goal of all of this was for Malchut Yehuda. And what I'd like to discuss tonight are the three women who save David and who save him in very different ways. And that is our goal for tonight. The idea of future, of continuity, of learning, of Kabbalat HaTorah is so important to us that on Shavuot, we read about Malchut Beit David. The Midrash says that David was born and died on Shavuot. And that is a very important connection of David and Malchut and Torah and continuity. We see in his Tehillim how connected he was with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and that very special bond that they had. If you look in Breishit, in Perek Lamed Chet, we see that after Yehuda sold Yosef, and he was very instrumental, Vayered Yehuda Me'et Echav, Yehuda separates himself from his brothers, and he marries a Bat Ish Kna'ani. Now we know that Avraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov went to great lengths in order to marry from the family, in order to marry from their extended family and general ideology in one sense. And yet when Yehuda separates, he marries a Bat Ish Kna'ani. So Yehuda is already separating himself from his community, from family. And as we know from the Midrash, Vayered Yehuda Me'et Achav, the brothers actually blame him for the selling of Yosef. And Yehuda, who had so much potential to be a good leader, to lead in the right direction, we have Reuven, Shimon, and Levi already who went in a different direction before this incident with Yehuda. And we have Yehuda selling Yosef. And after he marries his first son to Tamar, and the second son who has to do Yibum, Tamar, and Yehuda doesn't want to give the third son, Shelah, to Tamar. We understand he thinks that she's really a negative individual, the kiss of death, according to Yehuda. But Yehuda doesn't fulfill his responsibility of making sure that his son is going to be continuing and having children and marrying. We all know that Tamar does a drastic act. She sits on the crossroad and she actually conceives a child from Yehuda. Yehuda does not know this because he didn't know her identity. But later, when he wants to set her out and for her to be burnt, Hotzi'uha v'tisaref, if you look carefully in the pasuk, what does she do when she's on trial? She shows him the items that she requested from him when he came into her tent. And when she shows him these items, it says, Vayaker Yehuda, we're in Pasuk Kavav, Vayomer Tzadka Mimeni. She is more righteous than me. She's more correct than I am. Ki Alkein lo netatiha l'sheila bni. Because I didn't give her to my third son, Sheila, she did this drastic act. And really, I am the father of these children, of these twins that she is expecting. In this case, we see that it was Tamar and her devotion and her connection and her wanting to be part of the Yehuda family in Am Yisrael, she really puts Yehuda in a situation, but she ensures his continuity. She ensures his continuity, but also Yehuda had to understand, what does it mean to be responsible? He let his two first sons die. He doesn't say anything. He's not involved. Later, we see that he's responsible for Binyamin, and he plays the lead role in the family, so much so that Yaakov gives him the bracha of leadership. If you look at the end of the perek, who are the two children who are born from Yehuda and Tamar? It's Peretz and Zerach. And Peretz pushes his way through. So he really, just like Yaakov and Esav, he becomes the Bechor. And Peretz is going to be the future progeny that is going to be the legacy, the heir for the future of Malchut Yehuda, the continuity of leadership with Yehuda. So we see with Tamar that her focus on continuity, on family, on wanting to make sure that Yehuda is going to have a future, that Yehuda is going to have continuity, destiny, is really in the hands of Tamar. In two ways, the physical destiny, that Peretz is going to be the father of kings, and also with the fact that her bringing these items, and for Yehuda to realize what that means, to take responsibility, your actions are your responsibility and have consequences, changes Yehuda's whole trajectory in life, and all of Shevet Yehuda going forward. For generations, we don't see any real leadership from Yehuda, except in two incidents. We have with Kalev, with the Meraglim, and we also have with Nachshon ben Aminadav, in and being a leader of Shevet Yehuda. But what we don't have is any leadership on a national for Am Yisrael, or anyone who's really taking this kind of stand once we get to the time of the Shoftim, when Bnei Yisrael are all over the place, where they don't have one central leader. And that's where we get to Megillat Rut. In Megillat Rut, what do we see? We see that Bnei Yisrael are looking to their leadership in Yehuda. And here we have someone from Beit Lechem. His name is Elimelech. He could have been king. And yet, when the going gets tough and there's a famine in the land, he leaves. He leaves with his entire family. And even Naomi, who is the wife, doesn't say anything. She doesn't stop him from doing this deed, which means abandoning his entire people. Different than Avraham, who takes everyone with him when he goes down to Mitzrayim. But when the sons then take power, Mahlon and Chilion, and again we have two sons who die, a similar parallel, Mar and Yehuda, we don't even have Naomi taking responsibility. Her only responsibility, okay, I want to go back home to die. And her two daughters-in-law come along with her. And Ruth comes along with her. Despite the fact that this doesn't have a future necessarily for Ruth, because she's a foreigner. She's not part of Am Yisrael. She's a Moavia. Just like Tamar, we don't know her background, but she's not from the extended family. Here too, we have Ruth, who's a Moavia, but she wants to come with Naomi. And she is determined to cleave onto Naomi, to be part of Am Yisrael. She goes and she says, Naomi, I want to look in the fields and I want to find favor in the eyes of Boaz. And she does go and she collects in the fields. And Boaz recognizes her and knows her story. And she says, why are you recognizing me? I'm a foreigner. Ruth totally understands her foreigner status. But yet they were family members. Ruth was married to one of Elimelech's relatives. Naomi is Elimelech's relative. He should have taken them in. Not just let them collect in the field and get tzedakah that way, but he should have taken them in. And tells her, I know everything you did. You were so nice to your mother-in-law. You're like Avram Avinu, that you left your family and everything that you knew and your religion. And he says, Yishalem Hashem po'alech, Hashem should pay you back. And Hashem should give you full recompense because you came under Hashem's wings and you should be compensated by Hashem. And Ruth answers back, no. Emtzachen be'inecha, Adoni. I want to find favor in your eyes, which means it's your responsibility. It's not HaKadosh Baruch Hu's responsibility. Of course, Hashem does everything. But our job in this world is to do our hidlut, to take action, to be proactive. And Ruth is trying to teach that to Naomi and to Boaz. But she's so subtle that when he says, follow the field hands, she does that for a very long time and nothing's happening. And then finally, she reawakens Naomi. And Naomi finally comes to realization, oh, you know, we have a relative and he's Boaz. You know, he should really be redeeming you. And when it takes such a long time, finally Naomi says, and we are in Perek Gimel. She says, Halo avakesh lach manoach asher yitav lach. I'm going to find you that's going to be good for you. Now, remember, if Naomi doesn't have Ruth taking care of her, Naomi really might be alone. Remember, none of the relatives and none of the neighbors came and took care of her. They were left to fend for themselves. But now Naomi, by seeing Ruth's proactiveness, is awakened and realizing, I didn't just come to Israel to die. I came to make a future. And she tells Ruth, you know what? Go down into the barn at the night. Be by Boaz's feet. And when he wakes up and is startled, you should speak to him. But Naomi doesn't tell her what to say. She just says to her to go down. But Ruth knows exactly what to say. What does Ruth say? Ruth says in Pasuk Tet, Perek Gimel Pasuk Tet, Anochi Ruth Amatecha, Uparasta Knafecha Alamatecha. I am Ruth, your maidservant, and you have to spread your wings on me because you are my redeemer. He thought, oh, get tzedakah, Hashem should take care of you. And Ruth is saying, no, you have to take care of me. She's putting him in a situation just like Tamar puts Yehuda in the situation. You have to make a decision. What is going to be your decision? Are you going to take responsibility or not? And what is his reaction? Brucha at Hashem biti. You are blessed. And this chesed is even greater than the other chesed of being nice to your mother-in-law and of leaving your whole family and your background to join the Jewish people. And in the end, even though there's a closer relative, he finally marries Ruth and redeems her. And as a result, we see that what is the bracha that Ruth gets? That she's an eshet chayil, that she's like Rachel and Leah, that she's like Tamar for Yehuda, who gave birth to Peretz, which means this union is going to be not only full-fledged as part of the Jewish people, but like the Imahot. Not only that, but like Yehuda, who with Tamar gave birth to Peretz, who is part of the leadership of Am Yisrael. By Ruth being proactive and Naomi being proactive, but galvanized by Ruth, this idea of awakening, of being part of Am Yisrael, of having a future, is what both Tamar and Ruth and Naomi, so all three, are able to achieve. Look at the Zohar. The Zohar explains that two women built the house of Yehuda. And who are they? They are Tamar and Ruth. Because they were devoted and they wanted children and they wanted continuity. And this idea of continuity, of looking to the future, is what's unique about Tamar for Yehuda, is what's unique about Ruth and Naomi, but it was mostly Ruth, for Boaz. What I would like to speak about tonight, as a new concept that we're speaking about, is this idea of the three women in David's life. Who really build up David and help him survive, continue and have a legacy in the future? So I would like to present the three women in David's life. And many times, either you make everyone wait for the mystery, but what I want to do is I want to show my end game. So when we look, we'll see how the details fit in. There's always the debate. Do you read the end of the book and then read the beginning to see how everything works out? Or do you just take piece by piece? We all know so much in Tanakh, so I want to build this, but also let you in on the end in the beginning, so you'll see how the pieces fit in. My theory for tonight is this. Michal is woman number one, the main woman in David's life. Woman number two is going to be Abigail. Woman number three is going to be Bathsheba. And in all these situations, we're also going to see danger lurks. Danger with Tamar, the two sons died. Danger with Ruth, her two husbands died. Her husband died and her sister-in-laws, meaning the two brothers died, just like we had with Yehuda. So there's always things fraught with danger. And we're going to see that in all three cases, with David, his life and his spiritual life and his feeling to be in danger when he has these three interactions. And yet in the end, we're going to see wife number one, Michal, she's going to save his physical life, but she's not going to be a great spiritual mentor to David at all. And she is not going to really understand what's unique about David. Abigail, she is going to save David's kingship. He's going to do something drastic, killing Nabal, wanting to kill Nabal. And she stops him right at the right time to make sure that he is going to have a kingship. Because if he kills Nabal, he's going to be a murderer and no one's going to pick a murderer as king. Being a warrior is different fighting God's wars than being a murderer. Abigail saves his kingship. But it's going to be Bathsheba who's going to save his future. She's going to give birth to Shlomo. And we know all the difficulties that are going on. And a very interesting with David and Bathsheba, especially initially. But it's going to be David and Bathsheba. It's going to be Bathsheba who's going to speak to David HaMelech and confront him to say that he must pick Shlomo. And Shlomo is the future of Malchut Beit David. And Bathsheba saves his future. So Michal is going to save his present, his life, his physical life. Abigail is going to save his kingship. And she will understand who he is and bring him back to who he is. But it's going to be Bathsheba who is going to make sure that there's a future. So now we're going to see that inside, knowing my theory. Now we're going to look inside and see how does that work with the psukim and to make a real good case for these three ideas. When we meet David for the first time, we're in Shmuel Aleph Perek Tetzayin. We meet David, and the first description we get of David is Admoni im yefe enayim v'tov ro'i. He's a redhead or ruddy, but he has beautiful eyes and he's good looking. Different than Shaul, who was tall, a head and shoulders above everybody else. And Shmuel's not expecting this, but Hashem says he's the one to anoint. Shmuel thought maybe the other sons are really worthy of being anointed. And the Midrash Shmuel says something very fascinating here. Why was Shmuel hesitating? What was Shmuel thinking? And the Midrash says so beautifully, what was Shmuel thinking? Shmuel sees these two parts of David. Admoni, ruddy. Who else does it say Admoni in Tanakh? It is Esav. Vehu Admoni. And we speak about the Admoni in Esav as also being someone who's a murderer, who likes to kill blood. On the other hand, he's Tov Ro'i. He's also thoughtful. We see his eyes. Tov Ro'i, not only good looking, but he sees well. He has foresight. He has intuition. He understands. So Shmuel is seeing these two dueling factors in David. And the Malbim explains it even further. If you look at the Malbim says that that's what was bothering Shmuel. On the one hand, he sees this element of David. But on the other hand, he also sees that he can be clairvoyant in the sense of thinking clearly and being a good person. No, which is going to be more powerful in him? And Shmuel was very doubtful. But Hashem says, no, in the end, he's going to make the right decisions. But this Midrash and the Pshat of Admoni im yefei naim v'tov ro'i is a very interesting idea. Leaders are complicated. David HaMelech is very complicated. We have so many inner thoughts and so many inner passions. And our choices with what we're going to do in life really decide who we are. But many times in life, we need people around us to give us good advice. And sometimes we'll take it and sometimes we won't. We saw with Tamar and Yehuda, when she shows the items, Yehuda could have said, I don't know who you are. I don't know these items. You stole it from me. Boaz could have told Ruth, listen, there's someone else. It's not really my responsibility. And I told you already, go after the shepherds. Sorry, after the people who are collecting in the field. It's not my responsibility. What she was able to show in Boaz, what Tamar was able to show in Yehuda, is this idea of responsibility, of finding who they are and using those leadership qualities to make those decisions. And sometimes those decisions are hard, hard won. We go through in order sometimes to make the right decision. It's not always smooth sailing. Many of our leaders in Tanakh have gone through many difficult things. And it's not that, oh, they've never made a mistake in their life. Many of them have. But they learn from their mistakes and they move on. But you also need good people around you to give you good advice and lead you in the right direction. When David is anointed, Shaul takes him in to be his Noseh Kelim. And David is very successful. When Goliath comes, and we see this in Perek Yud Zayin, when Goliath comes, we see something very interesting. No one goes to stand up to Goliath. And yet when David, who comes with a message from his father, he sees what's going on, right away he wants to speak to Shaul. He wants to go and fight against this individual. But how does he do it? Shaul wants to give him his armor. Shaul wants him to be like another Goliath, armor versus armor, sword versus sword. But David does not choose that. David chooses to take rocks and a slingshot because that will prove that this is a war that God is fighting for him, Bnei Israel. And Hashem fights Bnei Israel's wars. And when David approaches Goliath, he gives him a beautiful speech. And he says, this is really a war between Hashem and what you think are your gods. This is not just a physical battle. So David understands this idea of what battle's really about. It's about God is fighting the wars, not about how adept you are physically. But Goliath looks at him, Vayivizehu, Pasuk Membet. He looks down on him. He's not impressed with him because he only sees his small stature. He doesn't know. And he thinks the only thing that could really beat me is a warrior. But really, David is saying Hashem is the one who's going to beat you. And what does he do? He throws the slingshot and he kills Goliath. And it says very clearly, if you look at Pasuk Nun, V'cherev ein biyad David. It wants to emphasize, the Tanakh wants to emphasize that David is not using a sword like Goliath. He's really coming in the name of Hashem. The stones are representing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Who greatness? Yonatan realizes this greatness and loves David. Bnei Israel realized this greatness and loved David. Michal realizes this, that he's this great hero and loves David. Now remember, part of the prize for winning and beating Goliath was going to be winning the daughter of the king. Michal loves David. She wants to be married to him. Merav, the oldest daughter, is not interested, and Shaul already betrothed her to somebody else. If you look very carefully in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Chet, it tells us that Micha loves David. And look how she's mentioned. In Tanakh, assignations are very important. Are you the mother of someone, the brother of someone, the son of someone? U'micha bat Shaul ahavitahu. Michal, the daughter of Shaul, loves David. So Shaul gives Michal his daughter. And why is he so interested? Because he is upset with David. After the whole issue with Goliath, and in general, all the women come out and cheer and say, Shaul kills thousands, but David kills tens of thousands. Shaul is so jealous of David. And we see that the family, Natan, who loves David, we have who loves David, all of Bnei Israel love David. But Shaul is the king. He thinks he's going to use Michal to kill David. And many times, what does Shaul want to do? He wants to kill David. He tries by himself with his own spear. He tries with his daughter. Oh, if you marry her, you have to kill many plishtim and bring me their foreskins. Instead of 100, he kills 200. Shaul is so exasperated that even after he tries to spear him, David gets away. And you understand the message here. Goliath comes with a spear and a sword, and now Shaul is coming with a spear. Also, a very interesting parallel between Goliath and Shaul. Big, very interesting. So Shaul feels besieged. All his kids and Bnei Israel love David. So he thinks, okay, I am going to destroy David. How? I'm going to surround his house. I'm going to send my soldiers. And in the morning, after he's sleeping, and my daughter is not going to be disloyal to me, we're going to have David captured. But they come to Michal. And she tells David, look at Shmuel Aleph Perek Yotet in Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vataged le David Michal Ishto. Not anymore is she the daughter of Shaul. The daughter of Shaul. Now she is David's wife. And in this moment of great loyalty, what does she do? She tells David to run away. But when Shaul asks her, how did you let my enemy leave? It just says Michal. So she was the daughter. Then she was the wife. Now she's just plain Michal. So how is she answering? Is she wavering now? What is her identity? Where is her loyalty? But she tells Shaul, he threatened me. I'm going to kill you if you don't send me away. So here we also see that when Michal had to confront her father, she did not have the conviction to tell her father, I sent him away out of my own free will. And again, we have a beautiful midrash that really explains this difficulty for Shaul, because here he had two children, Yonatan and Michal, that help David, that are more loyal to David than they are to him. But while Yonatan keeps his loyalty till the day he dies, even though he's very loyal to his father and he dies with his father, he's always going back to visit David and help him. Michal, we're jumping ahead. Michal, after a while, is married to somebody else, to Palti ben Laish. And only later, David requests, now I'm king of Yehuda, I'm requesting that I get Michal back. So he asks it from Ishbosheth. We're moving ahead in Tanakh, we're in Shmuel Bet right now. And David, after he captures Yerushalayim, wants to bring Aron Brit Hashem to Yerushalayim. Look at Shmuel Bet Perek Vav. Shmuel Bet Perek Vav. When David brings Aron Brit Hashem to Yerushalayim, what happens? He's dancing and singing with everybody. He's dancing and giving them food. And who's looking from the window? Now remember, Michal saves him by bringing him down the window. So the same idea, window, window. Like Rahab saves. So she saved him through the window. So now when we have the idea of the window, is she going to save him again? It says, when she sees the Aron Brit Hashem, Umichal Bat Shaul. We're in Shmuel Bet Perek Vav Pasuk Tet Zayin. When Michal's looking out of the window, who does she identify with now? She identifies as Michal Bat Shaul. She's looking out the window and she sees him dancing and singing, and she comes to confront him. And when he wants to come to give a bracha to his family, Vateitze Michal Bat Shaul, she is the daughter of Shaul here. And what does she say? Oh, now you're dancing with everybody, the lowlifes? So she thinks she's going to confront him. Remember, all the women confront the men so far. She thinks she's going to confront him and convince him, you're not behaving right. To be a king, you have to be like Shaul. You have to be removed. You have to be aloof. You have to be separate from the people, not from the people, one of the people. At that moment is not hearing her advice and saying, yeah, you're right. He is telling her, you know what? I am humble and I'm with the people, and that's why Hashem chose me over your father. Which means at that moment, she thinks she's going to put him down, and she's cynical, and she thinks she's going to make him feel bad, but she's helping him realize his mission as a melech, not to be like Shaul, but to be part of Am Yisrael. And at that moment, it says, why does it end with this? Ulamichal bat Shaul lo haya layeled ad yomotah. She doesn't have a child until the day she dies. And there's a big debate. Did she have a child before? Did she have five children before? And only from this moment on, she never gave birth. But the point is a lack of continuity. She doesn't have a future. She is not going to be the future of David. This was a great opportunity to be the future of David, to have children with him, to be in his view and his ideology. But she misses that. She misses that. So her only greatness for David is that she saved his life. But she doesn't connect with him spiritually. She doesn't understand really who he is. She's really always Bat Shaul. And she really abandons David. And it's only David forcing her to come back to be his wife because he won her with 100 Orlot Plishtim. Is this connection. Woman number two, Abigail. Now remember, we're moving back to Shmuel Aleph. I just wanted to do each woman separately. In Shmuel Aleph, as we said, let's go back to the idea when Shaul hounds David and he's looking all over for him and he wants to kill him. David is an outcast. He has to escape and he just has a group of 400 angry men who really join him. Who join him and are part of his group. And David at one point has Shaul in the cave and he's about to kill Shaul with his sword, but he only cuts his coat. So close were they to having that confrontation. But later on, David says, you know, I had you in the cave and I could have killed you, but I didn't. And yet, when David is in En Gedi and he's almost killing Shaul, but he doesn't, and he does the high road, we find that later David is getting more and more desperate. And when he finds out that Naval is celebrating a great harvest and success with his sheep, David, who has watched all of Naval's possessions, feels, I should share in this. And David comes to Naval and Abigail. We are in Shmuel Aleph, Perek, Kafhei. And we have Naval and we have Abigail, who is defined as a Tovat Sechel, intelligent, and Yefat Toar, beautiful. Intelligent and beautiful. But she's married to Naval. Naval comes from the Yehuda family of leadership, so he has potential. And we all know to be successful, most important thing is have a great wife because she is really going to bring you in the right direction. And what happens? We see that Abigail hears that instead of Naval saying, yes, I'm going to share everything with David, Naval says, no, I don't have to join you or give you. When Abigail hears this, she realizes a big mistake. David does deserve something. But David was so upset when Naval said, I'm not sharing anything with you. And here David is on the run and feeling desperate. He swears to his men that he wants to kill Naval and all the males in the family. And David is on his way to kill Naval and the entire family. But Abigail confronts David and she tells him in a beautiful, long speech. She says, look, Hashem saved you from Shaul. Remember the time you killed with a slingshot? Remember you're only supposed to kill in Hashem's name? Remember it should not be personal? Abigail reminds David everything about him that's great. She reminds him that he really has this potential for leadership. He was anointed as king, but he's not king yet. And if he does something wrong, he's going to lose his future. Because even though he's anointed, he's not crowned. Just like you could be betrothed, but you're not married. So you're not at that last stage yet. But David swore that he's going to kill everybody. That's macho in front of all your men. And here this woman is coming to argue with you and tell you, you know, you have to rethink this. She brings him food. She brings him gifts. She explains to him that you can't do this. It's going to destroy everything that you stand for. And at that moment, David understands. And what does he say to her? He also gives her a bracha. He says, Baruch Hashem Elokei Yisrael asher shlachech, Hashem sent you. Ubaruch ta'amech ubruchaat, you are blessed. So we have Boaz saying, bruchaat. We have David saying to Abigail, bruchaat. We have, in all these situations, we have this bracha, this idea of understanding. And David does not kill Naval. Hashem actually gives him a heart attack or an aneurysm or a stroke, and he dies 10 days later. What's fascinating about this situation is that Hashem really saves David in this case, and he could have destroyed everything about his kingship. So Abigail saves his kingship. She saves him that he will be able to continue to be king. And the Midrash says something beautiful. It's really Abigail, because all the korbanot could not save David. All the korbanot in the world could not save David if he did this act, which means there would be no kapara. So Abigail saves his kingship. What about Bathsheba? We're in Shmuel Bet, Perek Yud Aleph. Again, such a complicated situation. David should have been out fighting. He should have been out with all the warriors. But instead, he stayed back. He's in the wrong place at the wrong time. He shouldn't be wandering. His eyes shouldn't be wandering. What we see with Bathsheba, it could have been catastrophic. And unlike with Naval, that Hashem takes care of Naval, David actually makes sure that Uriah is killed in battle. So David does a terrible sin, and Nathan gives him a parable. And David understands the parable. And he says, this person is responsible. And then when Nathan says, but you're the person, David understands and says, Chatati. I really did this terrible sin. Chatati Lashem. This idea of admission. So Nathan tells him, Hashem forgives you, you won't die. But he's not totally forgiven. We see the terrible difficulty and punishment that David has. He has to run away. Avshalom takes over. David is totally barefoot, escapes in a terrible exile, and really goes on through terrible, terrible hardship. But David is not destroyed by this. And he doesn't look at Bathsheba as the enemy. What's fascinating in this case is that we would have expected that Abigail would be the mother of the future king or future of continuity. But Abigail's son does not rule. Abigail saved his kingship. Michal saved his life. But when it comes to the part where David is old and frail, and Adoniyahu, one of his sons, takes the kingship and wants to be leader, it's Natan HaNavi and Bathsheba that confront David. And she, along with Nathan, speak to David and give him the speech and say, you know what? You promised that Shlomo is going to rule. It is Bathsheba who confronts David to make sure that there's going to be continuity, that there's going to be a legacy for David. And it won't be his son Adoniah who doesn't continue in the ways of David that's going to take over. She has to get him back on track to make a decision, to make sure that he votes with his feet for continuity, to make sure that Shlomo is going to rule. And David will not say that Shlomo is going to rule without Bathsheba coming back into the room, because Bathsheba speaks, then Nathan speaks. But David says, I insist that Bathsheba come back into the room. And what does she finally say? We're in Perek, Malachim Aleph, Perek Aleph. She says, Yechi Adoni HaMelech David La'olam. David is going to live forever through this son, Shlomo, through this idea of continuity. Now, it was a very rocky start. It was very difficult. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, in Daf Kuf Zayin Amud Aleph, Ru'uyah Hayta Bathsheba, right? She was really destined for David forever. Ela Sheba Elav B'machov. But she came to him with a lot of difficulties and a lot of hurt. Sometimes the world is bought with Yisurim, but we can never forget to look to the future. We can never forget to look to the idea of continuity, of going on, of going further. And I think that's a very important message for us. At Har Sinai, yes, it was an amazing moment, but if we don't continue that legacy, if we don't continue this idea of Asher Yilmedun Liraoti Kol Hayamim, Asherem Chayim al Pnei Adama ve'et bneihem yelamedun. It's about future. It's about continuity. Yes, we have to make sure that today we learn Torah, and we're learning Torah, and we're spreading Torah. We have to make sure that our community thrives and survives. But the most important thing, like with Tamar, like with Ruth, like with Bathsheba, is also this idea of the future. Without the future, Har Sinai and Mamad Har Sinai will not really influence the world and will not have continuity. It's in our hands. We have to make sure that we teach our children, that we teach our communities, that we really spread this idea to all of Am Yisrael and the whole world. V'harevna Hashem Elokeinu et divrei Torah b'finu. Make the words of Hashem sweet. U'befi amcha Beit Yisrael. V'niyah nachnu v'tze'etza'enu. Us and our progeny. V'tze'etza'enu. Our future progeny, not just one generation. We have to teach it in the way where we're going to see there's going to be continuity. Continuity is what we are so focused on. Kulanu yodei shmecha v'lomdei toratecha lishma. That's what I want to give a bracha to everybody on this Erev Shavuot, that we see this idea, learn from Tanakh, learn from the women in Tanakh, learn from all the individuals, make this message of Torah and continuity really live forever and ever. Yechi Doni David HaMelech La'olam. That is the idea, that we are the foot soldiers in this idea of continuity, in legacy. And tonight was amazing, that we should all continue this limud and realize that Torah really lives in our hearts and in our future. Chag Sameach.
Thank you so much, Professor Rosenzweig. The next set of shiurim will start at 10:20. It's posted in the chat where the shiurim are located for the next set of shiurim. Rabbi Feldman, Dr. J.J. Schachter, and Dr. David Pelkowitz. We thank you again, Professor Rosenzweig, and Chag Sameach to everyone.